I'm Gene Randall, and this is VOA News.
This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to VOA Africa. Thank you for joining us. I'm Yehia Suhib in Washington. Here is what's coming up on Africa News Tonight.
WFP spokeswoman Elizabeth Beers warns global aid operations will be severely compromised if the service is forced to shut down.
That's VOA's Lisa Schlein on the potential loss of key international aid service. Details coming up also. Kenya has been elected to the United Nations Security Council. And at least 13 people are dead after a landslide hit the outskirts of Ivory Coast's largest city, Abidjan. All these and more ahead on African News Tonight. We start with our top story. The UN's World Food Program says its humanitarian air service could stop at the end of July without more funds to keep operating. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The humanitarian air service is a lifeline for millions of poor, vulnerable people around the world. Without the food, health, and other crucial supplies it transports, many would not survive. The thousands of aid workers flown to emergency hotspots provide people with the urgent assistance they need but would not otherwise receive. The service could stop because the World Food Program has received only 14% of the $965 million it needs to keep functioning. WFP spokeswoman Elizabeth Beers warns global aid operations will be severely compromised if the service is forced to shut down.
Hospitals in developing countries would not receive desperately needed medical supplies. Health centers serving pregnant women and undernourished child would not receive life-saving nutritional products for the prevention and treatment of malnutrition.
The WFP says donors must provide a substantial amount of money by the end of the first week of July. Otherwise, its global network of passengers and cargo services in support of the humanitarian community will stop at the end of July. Beers says it is particularly short-sighted and dangerous for the international community to withhold its support in this time of coronavirus.
And with the pandemic showing no signs of abating, it is crucial that the response doesn't stop now when it is needed most.
In recent months, WFP leaders say the air service has transported huge volumes of urgently needed medical supplies, including personal protective equipment, face masks and ventilators, as well as staff from scores of aid organizations. During that time, it says WFP contracted air ambulances have carried out 16 medical evacuations. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
The WFP Air Service provides aid in many areas to refugees and internally displaced people. Tomorrow is World Refugee Day. In his message to mark the day, United Nations Secretary General Antonio Guterres reminded governments of their obligations to help the millions worldwide who are forced to flee their homes by conflict or natural disaster. Guterres also praised the nations hosting refugees. The UN Refugee Agency, UNHCR, yesterday said global displacement is at a record high of nearly 80 million people, with 10 million having fled in the past year alone. Kenya has been elected to the United Nations Security Council, defeating Djibouti yesterday in a second round of voting by the 193-member General Assembly. Mexico, India, Ireland, and Norway were elected to the Council on Wednesday. Like Kenya, they will take up their two-year terms on January 1st, 2021. The Security Council is the only UN body that can make legally binding decisions, such as imposing sanctions and authorizing the use of force. It has five permanent veto-wielding members: the United States, Britain, France, China, and Russia. Morocco seems to have avoided the worst of COVID-19 with low infection and death rates. It has almost 9,000 confirmed cases with just over 200 deaths. Morocco declared a state of health emergency as early as March 20th and has extended it to July 8th. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi spoke with Elizabeth Mayers, an American law professor and founding editor of Inside Arabian News, who lives in Morocco, about the country's success so far at containing the virus, even though it is a popular tourist destination just kilometers from hard-hit Spain.
Morocco embarked on a very aggressive lockdown program early on, within only, I think, a couple of weeks of identifying its first COVID-19 case in March. So essentially, the country has been on a lockdown since March the 20th, the official announcement, and it's now been extended several times. We're on our third extension for the fourth period of lockdown until July the 8th. The aggressive measures that were taken were at the instigation of King Mohammed VI, who saw early on that given the proximity of Morocco to some of the very hotbeds of COVID-19, such as Spain and just over the Mediterranean, Italy, that the borders needed to be closed immediately. And that's what happened. All international flights were shut down immediately for an indefinite period. No international travel allowed of people. Essentially, people have been forced to stay home. And in order just to go out, they have been required to have specific permits that were issued initially by their maqdem or their chief of their neighborhood or their village in order for them even to leave the house, just to go to the pharmacy, just to go to the supermarket, et cetera. So basically everybody in the country has had a permit for the last 3 months to get out. Masks have been mandatory anywhere outside, especially in the supermarkets. Businesses other than the shops that sell essential things like food and everyday goods and the major supermarkets have all been shut until extremely recently. And large gatherings have been prohibited, including attending mosques services. There's also been quite a crackdown in terms of identifying and finding gatherings, such as on rooftop. The Moroccan government has used drones to do that in some of the major cities to disperse groups that gather on the rooftops. So the measures that were taken early and taken very aggressively and have been enforced for the most part by the police.
So now Morocco is embarking on deconfinement. What does that entail?
After more than 2 months of lockdown, the Moroccan government announced on June the 9th, along with extending the declared state of emergency until July the 8th, it also announced that it would be embarking on this deconfinement, as they call it, in phases. So specifically what they did was they divided the country into two zones. Zone one, we call the happy zone, are the places, the regions, and the smaller cities that are now, the lockdown is being lifted, and they are allowed to recommence their more everyday lives, but still with the social distancing measures in place, like mandatory wearing of masks. And many of the shops now that are open have put into place measures such as in the entrances, there are disinfectant places where you wipe your feet. They have sanitary hands. The unfortunate, unhappy zone two includes, however, many of larger cities. So Casablanca, Marrakesh, Tangier, Fez, these cities, some of the major also tourism cities, are still under lockdown with the measures, the stay-home measures, the travel restrictions still in place until further notice. Now, they may be lifted as we go forward gradually, but there has been very little transparency, if you will, from the Moroccan government as to when and how that's going to happen for Zone 2. We're finding that there's really little information as to the hows, the whys, and the wherefores that these things are happening. And so, therefore, it's difficult for people to plan.
That was Elizabeth Mayers, American law professor living in Morocco. She was speaking to VOA senior analyst Mohammed al-Shenawi. At least 13 people are dead after a landslide hit the outskirts of Ivory Coast's largest city, Abidjan. Following 5 hours of heavy rain, authorities are also reporting that around 20 houses were swept away. The Associated Press reports that a search is underway for others missing. Abidjan is the home to some 5 million people, many of whom live in precarious shanty towns in flood-prone dangerous zones. Landslides and deadly floods are common in Abidjan during the rainy season, which runs from April to the end of October. Officials in the country are saying the death toll could get higher with the ongoing search. Cameroon's military says it has restored security on an important trade road between Western Cameroon and Nigeria. The military this week said it had killed at least 13 separatist fighters who had blocked the Bamenda-Inugu road for 2 months and were demanding illegal tolls. The rebels deny it was their fighters and blame other armed groups. Mokiedwin Kinzeka reports from Yaoundé, Cameroon.
General Valenka, commander of Cameroonian forces fighting separatists in the English-speaking northwest region, says his troops destroyed several camps along the road linking the Cameroonian town of Bamenda to Enugu in Nigeria. Nka says the four-day battle ended Wednesday night. He spoke via a messaging application from Bamenda. Nka says after battles that lasted 4 days, at least 13 rebels were killed and many locally made guns, explosive devices, pistols, vehicles, motorcycles, hard drugs, and a machine gun that was seized from the Cameroonian military by rebels a year ago were seized from the separatists. He says he appreciates the professionalism of his troops, even though one of them was killed and another wounded. Nka said Cameroon and Nigerian traders had complained to him a month ago that they were no longer safe on the road. After this week's attacks on rebel camps, Nka assured civilians that security had been restored and advised traders and travelers to report any suspicious movements and cooperate with the military. Jude Chukudi, a 42-year-old trader who buys motor parts and electronics in Nigeria to sell in Cameroon, says in spite of Nka's assurance, he is still reluctant to use the road. Speaking via a messaging application from Bamenda, he said on May 17, he was abducted by armed men on the road in the town of Bafut, and his goods worth an estimated $30,000 were taken and have not been found.
They were asking for a ransom of 5 million francs. I had to plead, and finally I called my relations and they raised 500,000 francs and then they took it. But then it was a very traumatizing experience, and as I speak right now, I feel very unsafe. I don't know if some of them can still trail you right up to the urban centers where they can always spot you out.
Chukudi said he is afraid the armed men may still be hunting for him because he reported them to the military. Eric Tato, a U.S.-based spokesman for the separatists, says armed groups that have arisen from the crisis in the English-speaking regions may have been responsible for the interruption of trade between Cameroon and Nigeria on the road. He says separatist fighters called Ambazonia fighters have been professional in their fight to create an English-speaking state separate from majority French-speaking Cameroon. He spoke via a messaging application from Washington.
It's a very ugly and unacceptable thing, which I have always condemned. But to say that Ambazonian fighters have been responsible, I would say it is entirely false. It's not Ambazonians. True Amba fighters are well schooled on the ethics of war.
Cameroon's military has maintained that it killed at least 13 separatist fighters who were blocking the road and collecting illegal tolls, abducting travelers and stealing their goods. Cameroon says several hundred trucks from both countries ply that road daily. Cameroon's 25 million people depend on Nigeria for 70% of their basic commodities, And Nigeria's 160 million people count on Cameroon for rice, corn, tubers, plantain, cocoa, tomatoes, and other farm produce. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaoundé, Cameroon.
In Mali, an opposition coalition holds a major demonstration in the capital, Bamako, today. Youth leader Niaga Diop told VOA's Peter Cloti protesters would press their demand that President Ibrahim Boubacar Keita resign. He says Malians are frustrated that the president has failed to keep his promises to address issues such as government corruption and growing insecurity. The protests come despite the president's calls for a dialogue with the opposition. In a speech last Sunday, the president said he will soon meet leaders of the opposition coalition. Despite the presence of foreign troops in Mali, extremist attacks have continued and ethnic killings happen regularly. Last Sunday, militants ambushed and killed at least 24 Malian soldiers in the center of the country. The leadership of the Nigerian community in South Africa has started distributing phase two of aid items to cushion the effects of the COVID-19 lockdown there. Mike Mbonye reports from Lagos.
Colin Simbo, the Secretary General of the Nigeria Union in South Africa, says the umbrella body of Nigerians living in the country spent more than 100,000 rands or above $5,000 in the first phase of palliative distribution. Mbo, speaking via WhatsApp, says the less vulnerable members in South Africa's 9 provinces and some non-Nigerians were reached in the first phase of the exercise. He says the union adopted a new approach in the second phase.
We approached retail stores and supermarkets such as ShopRite and made a deal with them to issue vouchers to those who are in need of these items. One of the reasons why we decided to use this method is because of the issue of social distancing and physical distancing.
Mbo says the union has also assisted members who lost their businesses during the lockdown. He says the body needs the assistance of government and philanthropists for that effort.
We are a non-profit organization as well. We are calling on the government. We are calling on the NGOs. We are calling on philanthropists to help us so that we can assist them, take them back into the system and into the economy so that they'll be able to take care of their children, they'll be able to take care of their family, and then the burden will be lifted on the government and then on the society.
Some beneficiaries of Phase 2 palliatives commended the leadership of the union for the assistance.
My name is Bishop Peace Charles, residing in Mafike, Northwest Province, South Africa. Yesterday, being the 4th of June 2020, I got that call and later received a NUSA COVID-19 grocery voucher worth 400 rand, redeemable at ShopRite and Checkers. Good people, I and my family are immensely grateful to Nigerian Union South Africa and as many individuals who funded this great venture.
Yes, so my brother, I thank you very much. I thank all the Nigerian Union that locate me where I am to say, may God bless you all in Jesus' name for your free will donation you give to us.
Mbo says the rise in numbers of COVID-19 cases in South Africa is worrying. He says the union believes that strategies put in place by the South African government will curtail the spread. This is Mike Mbonye for VOA News in Lagos.
Botswana has begun de-hoarding its wild rhinoceros population in a bid to save them from poachers. Botswana's wildlife officials say poachers killed 56 rhinos in the past 2 years for their horns, which fetch a high price in Asian markets. Botswana, since April, has been relocating its black rhinos, which are critically endangered, to a secret location. Mokindisi Dube reports from Habrone.
The country's acting director of wildlife and national parks, Cyril Taulo, says at least 56 rhinos have been poached in the last 2 years. As a result, Botswana has decided to dehorn and translocate all the rhinos in the vast Okavango Delta to a safer secret location. Both the white and black rhino have been targeted by poachers in the recent past. Conservationists warn the black rhino might be extinct by next year at the current rate of poaching.
A decision was taken to implement measures to protect our rhinos so that we could combat this, the poaching of these animals.
Some of the rhinos were relocated from neighboring South Africa in 2015, with Botswana considered a safer haven. It is unclear how many rhinos are in Botswana. Principal Veterinary Officer Madi Ruben said the dehorning process is not painful to the rhinoceros.
Dehorning of rhinos does not hurt the animal. What we do, it's a procedure that is really equivalent to, you know, cutting nails in perspective of human. So what we do is we preserve the growth plate of the horn, and we cut the horn where there is actually dead material. So in other words, there is no sensitivity within the area that we are cutting, and there is also no blood supply within that area.
Conservationist Neil Fitt said while it would be ideal to have the animals in their natural habitat, circumstances in Botswana call for a change of approach.
The poachers are really, really hammering us. So what the government has decided to do, which several other governments have also decided to do in the area, is a dehorning policy to discourage. So probably as a short term, I hope it's a short term, yes, I would support 100% what they're doing.
Botswana is battling a rise in poaching incidents, with nearly 20 poachers killed in gun exchanges with local soldiers in the last year. Mkondisi Dube for VOA News, Gaborone.
Today, in the United States, millions of people are celebrating Juneteenth. On June 19, 1865, African-American slaves in the western state of Texas learned they were free 2 years after the Emancipation Proclamation signed by President Abraham Lincoln ordered slaves in rebel states freed. Juneteenth is drawing new focus from all communities in the U.S. this year because of the widening strength of the Black Lives Matter movement. The May 25th death of George Floyd, a black man in police custody, has led millions of Americans to protest what they see as systemic racism lingering in the country more than 150 years after slavery ended. The movement has spread around the world. Yesterday in Britain, the Bank of England and the Church of England apologized for their role in the British slave trade. The central bank called it an unacceptable part of the country's history. And in France, anti-racism activists draped a black cloth over a statue of General Joseph Gallieni. Activists say the general, known as a French World War I hero, led harsh colonial efforts to suppress people in Mali, Senegal, Madagascar, and Vietnam. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voanews.com. On behalf of our producer, Mokbilia Baro, thanks for tuning in and choosing The Voice of America.
Africa has built a successful, effective social media strategy through Facebook, YouTube, Twitter, and other digital platforms. We are responding to our audience on the African continent and in the global diaspora. We believe in the power of connection and interaction to bring you news that is comprehensive, accurate, and objective. We see the changes in technology as an opportunity to engage with our audiences about the issues that affect them. At VOA Africa, we don't just report the news, we help shape the conversation on the continent. VOA,
your trusted source for news and information.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA.